Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
To an emerging forest, a safe place where we have the freedom to think about life without judgment. We take a look at society, we examine it, and we allow for the possibility of something new, something different. And now, here's your host, Alan Ritter.
Well, good evening, everyone. I hope you had a wonderful weekend wherever you are, or just a great time wherever you are, whenever you're listening to this, whether you're live now or sometime in the future. If you are listening live, you are welcome to call in. The call-in number to talk live is 646-564-9714. This is an Emerging Forest episode for April the 9th, 2017, and my name is Alan Ritter. And one of the main things that I'm doing in my life now is a small produce co-op in the South Jersey, southeastern Pennsylvania area, Philadelphia, areas of southern New Jersey like Collingswood, Cherry Hill, Oakland, Woodbury, places like that, Deptford. And over the weekend, I had the great honor to be invited to the Collingswood Green Festival, held yearly just about this time every year. And I was actually on a corner under a community tent right between two farmers, a really, really auspicious place for me to be, right between two farmers, because I'm basically trying to get plumbing hooked up between local farmers and local consumers. So I had the great fortune to meet with a few existing members who were coming around to see the Green Festival, and met me and hopefully get them booted up and active in the produce club to buy produce at discount rates. And I also met my sort of initial goal of how many people I wanted to sign my my sign up sheet, which was only 10. I mean, we were there from 9 a.m. till 2 p.m. and I set myself a really conservative goal, and I exceeded that. I had got, I believe, 13 or 14 names, and I've followed up with all of those people and asked them to join the Facebook page when they did tell me they had a Facebook account. Some people don't have a Facebook account, and I certainly don't mind when people don't have Facebook accounts. I work either way. All my ordering software, etc., is not on Facebook, but we have some good chats and good information and good notification on Facebook, but all that notification is multi-platform, you know, not relying on Facebook to be our backbone. Not anymore. So I was really, interested to see sort of all of the professionals interacting with, quote-unquote, the folks who came to see us, and then the interaction between the professionals. I had a very interesting set of conversations with Julie Pierre, who's a local farmer in the Collingswood area, and what she does is she goes to a house and gets the owner. The owners, of course, asked her to come to the house because what Julie does is tear up your grass and farm your land. So lots of people are interested in that, and she's a very interesting person, and we actually have a sort of a handshake agreement that she's going to start supplying some of her product in about 4 or 5 weeks through the Produce Club. So that's really interesting. And two tables over from her, one table over from her, two over from my table, is a gentleman who farms seeds. So he doesn't farm to get the plant, he farms to get the seeds. And he's in Elmer, New Jersey, and he's actually, his name is Nate, and he's from the Experimental Farm Network. And that's pretty interesting. And I had a short conversation with him, and I'm not sure whether he just said maybe sometime he'd have some interesting products in the green area. He of course, wants the seed, so he's not exactly going to give away the fruit. And just to my left, in this corner area under a tent, was another interesting farmer who actually hosts Nate and his Experimental Farm Network on her land. So it was interesting to talk to her and understand that her husband is getting near retirement age and is looking at their land saying he wants to farm and is looking for people to use their produce. So, of course, I stuck up my hand for that. So that's sort of my other activity during the week. And what I wanted to talk about in general tonight was sort of my platform for my the training that I've put myself through in order to make the assessments of this society as it is now and make the decision that the mathematics of the society that I see now, mind control, fear, is one that reduces options and one that I don't want to put my energy into. I don't want to promote it or further its continuance. I'm actually quite in the opposite direction. But with that said, if you look and you say, okay, there's one vector going in one direction and another person is saying he wants to create a vector going in the opposite direction, I'm certainly very willing to tell you that both vectors have merit because they both exist. So when they both exist, they both have reasons to exist, and even though I might not, the other vector might not appeal to me, that is an emotional reaction. The mathematical reaction is, if you're going forward, painting a tapestry with a different set of what I just call the vectors, directions of society, you wish to include all that exists at the present, instead of excluding any or seeking to stamp out anything. So what you're going for is you're going for a more diverse situation rather than a less diverse situation, even if the present situation is in and of itself anti-diversity creating. You want to retain the present functionality, not say, oh, it's non-functional, therefore you need to remove it. It's part of the whole. So with that sort of as a pretext, the pretext is inclusion rather than exclusion. I have looked during the last 11 years, or maybe one can propose, I've always looked, but just recently become aware of the nature of the game that we're playing in, the nature of the government-led corporatocracy, royal elite thing. And it doesn't, it's been around for many thousands of years. I really can't say how long it's been around because time is a very funny thing. And lives end and people forget, and collective memories can be changed. So let's just say it's been a while. It's probably been longer than that, but let's just say it's been a while. So one can either, I chose, after having been part of a group, a small group of vegan activists, and seeing what they were doing, I was sort of scratching my chin and thinking about the effectiveness of protesting against behavior by pointing at it and shaming people. And using government and using court systems. And I came to the conclusion, this is my conclusion for my personal style, not pointing the finger and saying it, that it's ineffective and it doesn't create change. I'm just of the opinion that using government to make change only makes more government or only makes government stronger because you're contributing to more rules of government, and you're also protesting within the structure of government. So right away that made me a little uncertain as to whether I should continue to play that game or whether I should think about doing something else. And I made a conclusion, I don't want to say rather rapidly, but I made a conclusion that I want to step, if I want a society that operates in a different way, I want to build it and walk in the society that I want to walk in. So what I did was I said, okay, I want to use my creation capability. I want to use what I ingest and then what I can create with my hands and my words and my policy toward others. I want to create a thing, and I want it to be, I want it to act like the sort of like the new vector that I want in society, the new society, the society that runs in the opposite direction to government. So I would propose to everyone listening to this that you can't, you know, be operating within a governmental ruled system and immediately have the vector go in the opposite direction. There's going to be, you know, a turning of the vector, a turning of the boat. So what I started to do is I started to create something called the Produce Club, something that I, produce distribution is something I had experience with from several years ago. I'm not an expert. I'm not a 30-year-old hand at produce. I'll readily admit to anyone that I have very little farming experience and very little knowledge of the produce game, but I sort of have enough knowledge to be confident in myself. You might say that I have enough knowledge to get myself in trouble. So be that as it may, my produce club, 1 year, 1 month, and 1 week after its creation, has a solid membership, a solid active membership of a little bit more than 160 folks, and has solid financials based on a ratio that I sort of think that when I input a certain amount of effort, as in that I look at by a dollar amount, the certain amount of sweat equity, that I should get a certain amount back. Now, I don't exactly look at the number of hours that I put in and say, I want to be paid a certain amount for each hour that I put in, because I put in a lot of hours. Capital that I put in and say, I want this much, or I, that's not what I want. I want to be able, there's a lot of things that I'm co-balancing here. So I'm co-balancing customer experience and customer satisfaction with my quality and prices against my needs to make money to pay for my rent and my my self-keeping. And I have very few wants at this point. And so I'm balancing also those few things. They're hard to balance because, but I actually have come out and I'm actually now very pleased with being able to have the gross in and gross out be a number that I appreciate, a number that I was actually shooting for as a goal, and also have that number be able to satisfy both conditions, customer conditions, and my conditions as well. So the summary of that is, even now, even with a very, very small produce club, I think I have achieved the condition that of a functional entity. And that makes me really pleased, because I actually have sort of a demonstration of my goal. And my goal was to create a produce club that was, you know, financially sound. But of course, it's financially sound, but it's fiscally tiny. It's fiscally really, really tiny. But it actually has reached and touched a lot of people, and I'm very pleased with that. So what I'm doing is I'm actually making my vision of what I want to see the produce distributor of the future that I've sort of defined in my head, that's of someone who distributes local produce, promotes local farms, has a farming network. I'm not in a 12-month agrarian area, but maybe reaches out and has contacts down the East Coast into 12-month areas at some point in the distant future. But for now, I'm pretty much tied to using the Philadelphia Regional Produce Market and the suppliers there for, at this point, most of my produce. And I dearly hope to move away from that. So you can see, or what I was talking about is protest versus creation and walking in your dream, and you can see that there are, I certainly applaud all the people who want to protest, but I've chosen to walk in my dream instead of doing the protesting. So the next subject that I'd like to talk about, I'd like to switch gears a little bit and talk about the steps that I see within the organization of the Produce Club and where we stand with those steps. So the Produce Club is going to have is going to have enough people using it so that I can factor a reasonable amount of local produce this summer. There certainly was some local produce factored last summer, but it was an incredibly tiny amount. So that's going to go up this summer. My location in Collingswood, New Jersey, right down Collingswood Avenue from the weekly farmers market on Saturday, and also the timing of the farmers market on Saturday, is really auspicious. Because I'm going to get some tutoring from a young lady named Jill Carl, who has a longer term relationship with the farmers market. She's literally someone who's there every week because she buys a lot of her food when they're active from May until November directly from the farmers, and she just knows them all and they know her very well. And she has agreed to introduce me around and teach me the ropes over at the farmers market. So I hope to establish a relationship where I can get the cast-offs, the seconds, and not just the cosmetically appealing, slightly dinged fruit, but the truly ugly stuff that maybe there wouldn't be a market for. Maybe I can make a market for that or make it worth their effort to bring it to me. In addition to that, there are always cast-offs. Jill was talking about one example where the farmer would be selling beets and ask the person, the shopper, whether they wanted the top, and most people don't want the top, so they would just amass a pile of tops, and that's a great source for, additional, for low-cost veggies, all those beet tops. So that's one source that Jill would go around and get. Of course, she wouldn't get them all because she'd be going very early in the morning. There are a lot of just natural, quote-unquote, things that are seen as being, that wouldn't amount to anything, but I'm sure that I can find a use for them or put them to use or put them into somebody's belly somewhere. The other thing that might happen, for instance, is at the end of the day, depending on the type of the day, if it's a rainy day and not that many people show up to buy, or for some reason there's a less demand on something that a farmer has brought a lot of, maybe the farmer is going away from the lot with a lot of something, and the farmers really don't want to go home with any produce they bought. And at that point, I would hope that farmer would have my number, or my goal is for that farmer to have my number and drive down the street and let's make a deal. Let's see what's an agreeable number at that point for that produce. Saturday, that would be Saturday at noon, and that's really auspicious because I sell produce starting Monday evening at 6 p.m. And I could even change that because I can have people coming to my house to get produce anytime after Saturday at noon when it gets dropped off here. So there's just a lot of very interesting developments going on. Down the road for the Produce Club, I would like to have a walk-in refrigerator. Now, the walk-in refrigerator that I think about is a walk-in refrigerator made from insulated refrigerator panels and just a residential air conditioner with some hardware to change the active range and temperature. Instead of going down to 60-something odd, the piece of hardware called a CoolBot actually changes the temperature range down to 40-something or even less. So your garden variety, normal residential air conditioner can now become something that can create a walk-in for vegetables, fruits and vegetables. What that would get us is that would get us the capability to store items that we got on Saturday, but moreover, to store items that we receive through the Philadelphia Regional Produce Market or from any source for a longer period of time in a bulk fashion for the club. So it would be basically become a large refrigerator for the group. Now, this becomes really interesting because this is a very efficient setup. It doesn't cost that much to run. It doesn't cost as much as your refrigerator costs because this is something that's very, very insulated, whereas your refrigerator is not that insulated, and it's also not that efficient because this is going to be a room by itself. And a refrigerator is an item that's at a low temperature with all kinds of leaks and all kinds of openings and closings. And it's also in a 70 plus odd degree room. So this leads to being able to buy more at a particular date when there's availability at a really great price for a group, as long as the group is willing to say, we stand behind you and we're going to be there to eat this stuff. So that's one next level of Produce Club development. The next level is, of course, using local suppliers. And using local suppliers to the point where we actually become a driver of local farming and actually being not just in contact with farmers, but actually being contracting with local farmers. So that brings us close to the bottom of the hour, and I'd like to introduce the music song that I really dive the bard, Green and Gray. See you after the break. Thank you.
on the 1st of May. A man in black came walking into a wooden glade, following the sounds of pipes on this beautiful spring day, high from the music that they made. But what beheld him within that place? A look of recognition fell across his face. Oh Lucifer, oh Lucifer, why do you appear to me? For I am a man of God, a priest. I'm no devil, I'm father to the man. I have seen him since the earth began. Neither black nor white, priest, hear what I say. I'm green and gray.
Green and gray. in to International Pagan Radio. You can hear your favorite artists such as Dave the Bard, Tuatha Dea, Spiral Rhythm, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, and many, many more. Join us for exciting shows like Ask a Witch and Storytime with Rook as well. www.internationalpaganradio.com on the net or on TuneIn Radio on your mobile devices. Join us on Facebook and Twitter too. International Pagan Radio, all pagan, all the time.
Welcome back to An Emerging Forest on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. We hope everyone was able to stretch their legs and get a drink. And now, back to Alan.
Well, hi, everybody. Glad you're rejoining me on this side of the hour. So what I've been talking about is styles of change creation. And a specific example that I've been using and been walking through is the progression of the co-op business that I've built called the Produce Club here in the Philadelphia region. And so just talking about some of the next steps that are hopefully going to take place as the club becomes more robust, as more people use the club, as more people see the advantages of using the club, and that I'm able to propose more reasons and ways to use the club that I've kind of already thought through and that I see are just complete winners economically and, of course, putting more plants, more whole, non-frozen, non-cooked plants into your body. So a really good idea to give a short reason, a short understanding of agriculture and why it's not forward-looking. So this material comes from various originators, and I would ask that you go look at their original works. One of those people, of course, is the works of Bill Mollison, the creator or co-creator of permaculture with David Holmgren. Certainly, I watched a lot of videos of him, Bill Mollison. David Holmgren sort of bowed out of the movement in a public way quite a while ago. Bill Mollison, of course, passed away in the fall of last year. Another party whose information I've taken up and integrated into what I think is a gentleman by the name of Mark Shepherd, who's a farmer and a social change maker in Wisconsin, and his farm that he actually has implemented his ideas on is also in Wisconsin. And his there's about a 2-hour and 40-minute lecture that he gives that's on YouTube called, you can find under Mark Shepherd Restoration Agriculture, which is something really key to watch. And then there's a gentleman by the name of Bob Kennard, who's a farmer in Sonoma Valley, specifically in Petaluma, California, whose information on plant function and how to farm and basically what, you know, he farms half of his plants for people and half of his plants to give back to the soil. Bird is a little bit more aggressive, and along the lines of not farming in an annual cropping manner at all and going more and more toward no-till. So the key points to talk about and sort of understand at the foundations of plant function is plants come in a progression and they condition a soil from a progression of infertility up to a climax forest, which is extremely fertile with an extremely deep organic mat, huge amounts of life in the soil, life being life-retaining water, that water being fresh, that water being contained within the bodies of the life, within the soil, in a constant soupy, composty body it's actually a living body. The soil becomes a living mass, as opposed to a desert environment in which all the seeds of life is there, just no organic material, but there's no life, there's no water. And in a massively water-retaining sponge, you have what's called a temperate deciduous forest, a temperate rainforest, something that attracts to it or pulls to it, just by its very nature, more rain. And that's one of the reasons why various regions of the United States, because where Alan lives and understands centric at this point, I sort of understand why this region is sort of very different from how it was 30 or 40 or 50 years ago. And it's because of the drop in soil fertility in the main. Of course, there are many other factors, but the main issue is a drop in vegetation and an increase in population and a reduction in the soil retaining capability of water, aka the drop in the amount of soil life. So agriculture as it's practiced now is a soil destroyer, because neither organic farming or either organic agriculture as practiced by commercial entities or conventional farming uses living soil. They just spray the dickens out of it with pesticides. And pesticides are used by commercial entities, whether they're farming organically or whether they're farming conventionally. That's just the nature of the game. They're a very large concern. They have to return a crop. They have to return a crop or tell their stockholders why they lost, and so they can't lose. So basically, they have to spray. So they do. So the various publishing houses publish something called the Dirty Dozen, where they try to give you the impression that organic produce doesn't have any pesticides on it. Well, of course it does. It has pesticides on it from the quote-unquote national list of approved substances that can be used to farm organically. Now, the interesting thing about these substances is that they're much less toxic than the approved substances for conventional farming, and so there's no limit to how much can be sprayed. Actually, the organic community, the organic farming community, would rather maintain the myth that there isn't any spraying, and it's quite an effective myth, because many, many people that I meet and many people that I still meet are of the opinion, and even myself to a large extent, are of the opinion that organic is quote unquote clean when it is quote unquote not clean. There are many agencies that test things and say there's a lot of pesticide residue on this particular vegetable and not a lot of pesticide residue on this other conventional crop. Therefore, this other one is the less pesticide ridden. But of course, if you can eat organic, eat organic. The issue is they're not testing for organically founded pesticides on organic fruits and vegetables. I don't know why but I know enough about marketing and about just not talking about it and getting away with it, so that I sort of see that they're just maintaining a myth. So the difference between organic and commercial and conventional commercial plant fruits and vegetables is very small. And the soil in which they are grown is poor. It's got very little soil life. These are plants that use fertilizers to grow. So while organic might be a step up in nutritional value, it's by no means an actual true functioning plant that would grow without pesticides in a soil that was cared for so that it would be actually able to feed the plant and have the plant develop a true full-blown immune system and defend itself from all the predators that are actually beaten off with a big stick called a pesticide and a herbicide and a fungicide in conventional and organic agriculture. Now, it is true that many local farmers, small farmers, do not spray. That is true. I know some of those farmers who do not spray. But I also know that organic farming in large commercial entities, stockholders and liabilities, and they can't not deliver a product. So, and also, there's a national list of organically founded substances that you can use to farm organically. So they're there, they're used. That's just the name of the game. So the name of the game to get a better product and a better nutritionally providing plant to put into your body is to farm without pesticides. And that's not something that's called conventional. That's not something that's called organic. It's something that is not done in the commercial divisions of agriculture today. So the works of Mark Shepherd is sort of the next level. The works of farmers like Bob Kennard, who's a natural process farmer in Petaluma, California, works of the Muth family farm in close to where I live, maybe 30 minutes southeast of where I live in Collinswood, New Jersey. They are also a natural process farmer. That's the next level to go to. But I know that both Bob and the Muth family farms are annual cropping for the most part. And I don't know exactly the mix on the Muth farm, but I know that Bob does have some orchards, so he is doing some annual, some beyond annual cropping systems. That's where you want to go, because the next wrinkle is soil structure. And when you come in with a plow, you tear up the soil structure. So initially, what you would have is you would have soil without much soil life. And you would have pioneer plants come in, pioneer plants like dandelion that would punch a big taproot down, and other plants that would come and use that big taproot, but you would never churn the soil up. So you would develop a system of the root punch holes from previous plants being used by the next generation plants to go even. And there are some stories of rye seeds having root systems that go down many miles to basically create channels where other systems could get down that far, to actually be down there and to be pulling minerals from that depth, to be sending, if the root systems are down that far, the bacteria and the fungi and the soil life is down that far. So that's how deep the soil life can get. That's how deep the wet and the soil conditioning can get. That's how deep the temper, the buffer, the wet buffered sponge can be that deep, counteract a storm system that's coming in that wants to rage and create chaos in the area, comes in and wants to change the temperature, but there's this buffer at 55 degrees that's the soil, and it's got a depth, it's got a thermal mass. It can't be changed just, at the snap of a finger by an air mass, which is much less dense. So what happens? The actual climate of the area is conditioned by the massivity of the soil life. In a nutshell, that's the whole climate issue. So in a nutshell, the produce club wants to go into a perennial farming situation that actually, works toward affecting climate change. So the connections are all there. The connections are relatively simple, but it's all based on executing plant function correctly and understanding that the plant, when the plant is happy and exercising and creating its own immune system, that the soil had to be quote unquote happy and fully not churned up, not running an annual cropping system, running a multi-year, many-year, running a perennial, running a permaculture cropping system. So that's what makes sense from my perspective, to get into this many, many decade plan to move from the direction that we've been taught, that we've been brought up in, to another direction that creates literally another society just from how you start to look at your food system and your acquisition of your food system. You just naturally start to work with the design of something that's going to take care of all of these other problems rather simply, and all of these other problems are, of course, cast as being, incredibly hard to deal with, an incredible emergency, when they're actually very simple. It's just a matter of paving over a certain percentage of the land, freeing up that land, making the land retain more water, which is just done with plants. It's not labor intensive. You just let the biology do what the biology does. You get out of its way. And that's the same thing with, how do I cure this nasty disease that I have? Well, you find out what things you haven't been doing that's in line with your design. A couple of things, ingestion of poisons through your body, animal products and things like that in the main. and just getting out of the way of the design of how you're supposed to, you know, do things. So the riddles are not that hard. The problems getting out of the way of executing behavior as we do now, but the problems that just small changes in behavior solve are like the main problems of the day, the things that cause, you know, governments to say, oh, we have to have these huge conferences and, you know, local people can't solve these problems. Well, government's in the business of maintaining fear. Government is in the business of acquiring power and taking it away from, and of course they're in the business of maintaining issues instead of removing issues, because when they remove issues, if they were to ever, you know, want to remove issues, they put themselves out of a job. So they're not really in the business of solving issues. Neither are most of the critters that you see running around that have jobs in this society. They want to maintain their job. So they want to maintain the polarization. They want to maintain your stress. And they want to maintain your fear. So it's all, the multifaceted society is all one riddle, just applied and painted on a wall in a different way. So I hope you got something out of this program. I hope you enjoyed this program. I always like to wind down my programs by just looking back at what I talked about tonight. Tonight was, I'm very fortunate to be able to step in to do what I think I want to do. It's sort of something that I was given an opportunity to do. I also had enough faith to say, okay, whatever happens will happen, and the impact will be on me. If it doesn't work out, well, the impact is also going to be on me if it does work out. And I don't know which is going to be the greater impact, but I kind of get the impression, I kind of know which is going to be the greater impact. So part of yourself, do that other project. That part of yourself, dream and have that big experience, because you're here for the big experience. If you can think of it in your head, give yourself as much time as you possibly can set aside to making that big dream happen. Because believe me, we're all waiting for you to show your real stripes. Because I was thinking and writing on Facebook, people were kind of laughing when I said, what does a schooling system and a testing system do? A testing system actually puts you in an arena with other people and makes you believe that your entire being is in an arena and is comparable to other people. And you are so different from everybody else. And I am so different from everybody else. Everybody is a wildly different, strange creature, really, and we've been brought together and we're so diverse, and there's just so much value to be brought forth between, you know, just by saying, who are you and why are you here, really, and just bringing forth your dreams, which is why I value every single person so very much. Once again, my name is Alan Ritter. My email address is RITTER.ALAN88@gmail.com. My website, if you're in the southeastern Pennsylvania area, is produceclub.us. That'll kick you to a Facebook page to join. I also have a produce Clubs Americas page. for the general group outside of the southeastern Pennsylvania area, southern New Jersey area. And I'm on LinkedIn with more, just about almost 12,000 connections. So get in touch with me if you want to be on the show. Get in touch with me if you want to just talk. If you were interested in starting a produce club in your area of the United States, I've had contacts from all over the United States and Australia and Amsterdam and England. So don't be afraid to reach out and ask me. Have a great week, and I'll talk to you again next Sunday. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.